This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We are continuing to get closer. NFL draft in the rear view. Got things a little juices flowing, if you will. We've got spring games mostly wrapped up. So no better time to welcome on friend of the pod, college football handicapper extraordinaire, the one and only Brad Powers, who joins us right now. And Brad, very rarely do we have news late in April outside of maybe an injury from spring, but we had a massive news story drop earlier this week regarding a team that is thought to be one of the betting favorites to win the national title in Texas Tech. So Brendan Sorsby right now, let's dive into what your expectations are about Brendan Sorsby before you get into adjustments. Do you think we see Brendan Sorsby play a college football game this fall?
No. And if I can make a bet on it, I would. Pun intended. I do not expect him to play. I do not expect him to ever play college football again. They'll make an example out of him. I don't care if it was a $1 parlays. He's been on college football. He's done. So I hope the kid gets the help that he needs. He's not playing college football for Tech this year.
So let's, and I know you were on, you had a great hit with Mitch and Paul on Follow the Money. For those of you listening with us, it's Wednesday the 29th. You were on Tuesday. What did you do from last year's Texas Tech team? Because also it's worth noting that the second overall pick in this year's NFL draft was also on Texas Tech. They go out and they spend big money to get Brendan Sorsby. So we're playing under the assumption he's not going to be on the field. David Bailey's not going to be on the field. Jacob Rodriguez, a tackling machine, he was a second-round pick to the Miami Dolphins. So from last year to this year, initially, Brad, what was your adjustment? And then with the Sorsby news, what's your adjustment?
Yeah, I was going to downgrade Texas Tech around 3 points, maybe a little bit more as I, got a little bit deeper into their roster and just to see who they had the replacements for those front seven. I did like what they did in the portal on the defensive line, but some regression. Last year was arguably, one of the best teams in school history. And again, losing some studs up front. So a little bit of a downgrade. But now with the Sorsby news, now we're approaching, a near full touchdown downgrade from last season's Texas Tech team. So significant downgrade, a touchdown. I don't downgrade everybody a touchdown or move them up a touchdown. So that's a big step back. With that being said, though, I mean, this is how far ahead that Texas Tech was compared to the rest of the Big 12. I still think they're the clear-cut prohibitive favorite in that conference. I would bet them still to win the conference at even money or even, the minus 110. As always, shop around for that. Hammond might not be ready to start. It'll be interesting to see if he's ready for the Houston game. That would be the game that I would worry about, but there's no BYU on the schedule. There's no Utah on the regular season schedule. Nobody in the non-conference. This is still going to be a team, and they get Houston at home. So probably a double-digit favorite in every game, even without Sorsby. Obviously, we live in a gray, and not everything's black and white. It's gray. So when the news hit, I did take some under 11.5 on Tech. Sure. That I thought that was a good bet. Played a little bit no to make the playoffs at plus money, just hedging a little bit of the positions that I had already on Tech. But if I had to make a bet right now at current prices, Tech to win the Big 12 would be in my pocket. I think they're going to be A-okay.
Yeah, you look at the win total, it did dip down to 10.5, still juiced over. I'm looking at DraftKings right now. I think FanDuel's juice might be a little bit shorter, but you mentioned the schedule. It is hilarious. I mean, you look at the non-con, Abilene Christian at Oregon State, and then Sam Houston, and no BYU, no Utah. So as we take a step back, they also get Arizona State at home, Houston at home. Right now, Brad, what would you say your top five is in the Big 12 heading into this year with this news?
Yeah, I would go Tech 1, BYU 2, Utah would probably be 3, Houston 4, and Arizona or Arizona State in that 5 range. Right now, I would say Arizona slightly ahead of Arizona State. I got to meander through the portal. I mean, Arizona State had to hit the portal. They don't have anybody coming back from last year's roster, so boy, there's not much. TCU's probably a little bit in the mix, but this conference is, I mean, obviously, I would say Tech payroll is double anybody else in that conference. So, I mean, it's not a fair fight right now, even without Sorsby. I think the biggest takeaway is I don't think Tech's a national title team, a contending team now with Sorsby. They're going to be basically what they were a year ago. They can make the playoffs, but they're not going to be, you know, competitive against a big boy in the playoffs.
Yeah, right now, DraftKings 20-1. I think they dropped them back. We had Matt Grill from DraftKings on primetime on Tuesday night, and he discussed some of the adjustments that they made. But to your point, can't really make a ton of them based off of, you know, is it, would you compare it to last year with Jake Retzlaff? Because I remember the Retzlaff news came out, Brad, and I immediately hit under, go under. And then they ended up going over their win total and going to the Big 12 championship. And look, last year's BYU team is not as good as this year's Texas Tech team. But is that a fair comparison where you're kind of in this limbo world? But to your point, Will Hammond coming off the ACL, we're not sure just whether or not he's going to be ready to go to start the season.
Yeah, I mean, I could see something similar. In fact, I'm waiting for more negativity in the markets to maybe even jump in further on Tech. You know, Hammond provided especially if we get some more clarity on Hammond. Say he's ready to go and healthy starting game one, then I'll probably, I think over 10.5 would be a decent bet at that point. I could see something. I don't know if they have a true freshman like a Bear Bachmeyer in the wings, provided Hammond can't start, but this team's loaded at almost every position. So, I mean, I thought with Sorsby in the lineup, they might have more upside than last year's team. So I think the market might end up overreacting.
All right. They've been in the news a little bit. I think you've tweeted about them because they're certainly not as a hot topic as they've been, just based off of the attendance at their spring game. But let's get to Coach Prime year 4 in Boulder, win total 4.5 off of a 3-win season. And, you know, you look at their non-con at Georgia Tech and at Northwestern, you play 2 Power 4 teams in the non-conference. That's not really ideal. They get Utah at home. They get Houston at home. They do avoid BYU. They also get Texas Tech at home. Sometimes when you're a bad team, Brad, you want to have the good teams on the road. Take your whoopings on the road and have some of those toss-up games at home, like going to Oklahoma State or going to Cincinnati. Certainly much rather have them here at home. So year 4, 4.5 the win total, minus 50 to the under at DraftKings. What's your assessment post-spring of Colorado?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yet again, it's a transition. You know, the roster's in transition. A ton of guys in the portal yet again. Not a lot of returning experience off of last year's team. Now, they did get a lot of experience, particularly on the defensive side of the ball in the transfer portal. I thought they did a decent job there. However, with that being said, I think you hit the nail on the head. Even if I think Colorado is going to be better this year, and I do think that's the case, I upgraded them about 5-6 points in my power ratings. That schedule, overly difficult, you know, almost sneaky, especially early. I mean, road trips at, you know, you mentioned Georgia Tech and Northwestern non-conference at Baylor as well. They got to win one of those. And this is all in September. And I would have them an underdog in all 3 of those games. They got to pull an upset there. Otherwise, this is going to get ugly if they don't win one of those road games. And by ugly, I mean, I only have them a clear-cut favorite in one game against Weber, the FCS team that they play. So I don't see them getting the 5 wins. And if they don't win a game early, it could get ugly. Maybe,
yeah.
You know, we saw some instances last year that Arizona-Utah back-to-back week stretch there. I mean, that looked like a team quit. I mean, that's how bad it was. They looked as bad in those 2 games as what they did the year before Prime took over. So I'm a little bit worried. I think this is Prime's last year. I know Marion's coming over, you know, to call plays, but they're in transition at both coordinators yet again. I just don't see it. So under 4.5 was in pocket, and I'm pretty happy about it.
You know, you mentioned tough schedules and transitioning to the Big Ten. Ohio State, you finish off that home-and-home with Texas. Last year, they opened up the season with Texas in that highly anticipated game that was low-scoring that we all recall. This year, it's week 2. They go down to Texas, which will be just an enormous game, one of the biggest games of the college football season. You go to Iowa. You go to Indiana. You go to USC. You host Oregon. They always play Michigan. Trip to Lincoln. It's a challenging schedule, but the roster has arguably the best player in college football, Jeremiah Smith. But you look at what they lost, a lot of pieces. If you watch the NFL draft, were Ohio State players, there's never going to be a full drop off Julian Sayin. I was listening to Greg McElroy's podcast. He had Julian Sayin as his best returning quarterback. So, you know, that's to each their own. You can kind of make a lot of people have that case. Curious your case on this Ohio State team, because it's very rare to see it. But Ohio State right now, you can get over 9.5 wins. You got to pay some juice, but it's at minus 165. What's your expectation with this really challenging schedule for Ohio State?
Yeah, so I still have number one in my power ratings. You know, I obviously love Jeremiah Smith. Keep an eye on a true freshman five-star Henry at number 15 for him. He'll be great, along with Brandon Innes. So they're loaded at wide receiver. No shocker there. The biggest question I would have on the entire team would be the offensive line that's kind of held them back the last couple of years and didn't look good in the spring game. I know they had a couple starters out, but their defensive front crushed them. Every single unit, first, second, third string, crushed that offensive line. Speaking of the defensive front, I know they lose a ton on defense, but hell, they lost more last year on defense and allowed the fewest points per game on average in any team in college football in 15 years. You got to go back to 2011 Alabama. So I think they'll be fine on that side of the ball. I think all their transfers, especially on defense, look like they're going to be hits. So it's still roster-wise the best team, in my opinion, in the country. However, you plug that in the schedule, and I've been following Ohio State football about as close as Notre Dame the last 35 years. This is the toughest schedule Ohio State's ever played in the regular season. I see a couple losses. I don't see three losses, though. I mean, you got to go back to 2004, the last time Ohio State lost three games. I don't count the 11 season when they, you know, fired Tressel and they suspended half the roster for the tattoo gate, but they don't lose three games, and this roster's not losing three games. I don't care who they're playing. I only got them in, I still have them a favorite in every game, although they'll be short favorites against, in my opinion, I have them favored over Texas. I bet them in that game. I think Texas is overrated. Favorite over Oregon, slight favorite over Indiana. I love over 9.5. I mean,
All right.
But I will say this, you need a soundbite. Let's say they lose three games. If they're close, I could see Ohio State being the first 9-3 team making the playoff.
I mean, with that strength of schedule, they still would have some big time wins on their ledger there. So you mentioned, I mean, I mentioned Texas, Ohio State, week two, going to be enormous. How about October 17th in Bloomington? Ohio State comes to town, a rematch of the Big Ten championship game that went Indiana's way, of course. And look, at this point, the market, I would imagine, Brad, is finally caught up to Indiana. We've got a couple of podcast listeners that let me know you should have been just blindly betting them nonstop. And, you know, credit to all of you guys who cashed that. You're never going to get Kirk Cignetti on sale anymore. So where are we on this Indiana team in 2026?
I still think they're a national title contender, and I'm with you. You know, I thought there'd be some regression last year. I thought they'd be like a, you know, not that they were going back to what they were, but I thought, you know, 9-3-ish, 8-4. I didn't expect them to upgrade their power rating just as much as I did the year before. I think you got to give them the benefit of the doubt. Obviously, a lot of roster turnover. You lose the Heisman winner, but I think Hoover will be super productive. He'll have his best season of his career, in my opinion. I love what Cignetti did in the portal. He's obviously as sharp as anybody as far as identifying talent. Turbo Richard at running back, I like him from Boston College. Josh Burnham, I don't even know if Josh Burnham's going to start. They got two Kansas State transfers on the edge that I like quite a bit. Their front seven on defense will be really good. They got, you know, multiple starters back. Offensive line, Carter Smith at left tackles is as good as it gets in college football. So all the pieces are there. I didn't even mention Nick Marsh, the Michigan State transfer, with Charlie Becker at wide receiver. That's a great 1-2 punch. It's still a national title contending team. 10.5, I think, is a fair number. Maybe they don't, you know, keep in mind, they still had a couple of close breaks last season against Iowa and Penn State in the Big Ten championship game. Ohio State, you know, came up short inside the 10, not once, but twice. So I think Ohio State gets them, but I can't, you know, pinpoint another loss there. So it's a 10-2, 11-1 type of team, and they're going back to the playoffs.
You know, USC is a team, as you wear your Notre Dame gear, for those of you listening to us, Brad's rocking some Irish gear, and I have purposely held off on the Irish so people won't lose their bleep over us just talking Notre Dame. But I've taken my jabs at Lincoln Riley And I think rightfully so. USC fans, USC alums have taken their fair share of jabs at Lincoln Riley. Their non-conference is an absolute joke because they canceled their longstanding rivalry with Notre Dame. San Jose State, Fresno State, and Louisiana. No way to get the fan base jacked up than those three to start the season. But you've got Oregon, Washington, Penn State, trip to Camp Randall, which we know the travel across time zones for Lincoln since getting to USC has been a daunting endeavor. Ohio State, Indiana. There's a stretch from late September to early November that it is going to be really challenging for this USC team. Looking at a win total around 8.5 or so. What are your expectations for USC this year?
Haven't bet it yet, but I certainly lean under. I think this is an 8-4 type of team, even though I think, you know, I am Bauer rated 12th overall in the country. There's certainly still a lot of talent there. And obviously they're welcoming in the number one recruiting class. Although how many freshmen can you, you know, expect to come in and play right away? Maybe that waffle kid at defensive end. But other than that, what they are going to be missing is that 1-2 punch at wide receiver and Lemon and Lane, in my opinion. They'll still be fine there. Mayaba, to me, turns it over way too much. And that's even going back to his UNLV days. So maybe if he, you know, for the first time in his career, he protects it. Maybe I could see them, but, you know, pushing a 9-3. And they went 9-3 last year, but still the schedule is just overly difficult this year. I just don't see it up front on either side. They get pushed around. They're in a physical league. The Big Ten at the top of the conference is the best in college football now. And they got to play a lot of the big boys. I don't see him beating Oregon. Don't see him beating Indiana. Don't see him beating Ohio State. And you got to win out the other games. I don't see it. 8-4.
All right. There's so much meat on the bone in that conference, but I want to get to others as well. But I got to hit Oregon because I know over at covers.com, you wrote them up as a possible national title bet to look at here. So Dante Moore comes back. He says, I don't want to go to the Jets. I'll stay in Eugene and have more success. And maybe that was a smart move by the former five-star recruit. So Dante Moore back, a lot of talent on that roster, as you would imagine. They open up the season with Boise State, which will be fun, at Oklahoma State, a team that they beat by, I think, 1,000 a year ago. Yeah. And then they got USC at the end of September. So, a unique opening portion of the schedule here for Oregon. What do you expect from the Ducks this year?
I'm expecting a lot. I've watched about 20 spring games already, including a lot of the big boys, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Georgia, Oregon, Indiana. The team that impressed me the most, and I get it's just one scrimmage, it's just a very small piece of the puzzle, but the team that impressed me the most was Oregon. Just the overall depth across the board, starting at quarterback. I mean, I'm not a big Raiola fan, but I don't mind Raiola as my backup quarterback, not my starter, so that's not too bad. And I'm not even sure he's a slam dunk winner to win this backup job. That's how good they are at quarterback. Wide receiver, getting Evan Stewart back, I think is an underrated topic that's not getting appropriately priced in some markets. To combine with DeCorian Moore. They got a great 1-2 punch at running back. They were true freshmen last year. I expect them to be even better this year. Offensive line, again, could be a worry. Lose a lot of guys to the draft, and I thought they were a little overrated last year. Up front is where, you know, these national championships are won. Going back to when Saban started dominating college football 15-plus years ago, and I think Oregon, at least at their starting front four, is the best in college football. I was looking in the spring game to see what kind of depth pieces they had because their top four backups last year all transferred out, and they're going to be fine. They had a couple kids in the backup roles that looked better than the starters, so... they've done an excellent job recruiting and developing there. Back seven's fine. And then the schedule, they'll be an underdog at Ohio State. Obviously, you can lose one now and still be A-OK in college football. If I had to make a championship bet right now, it'd probably be Oregon. First ever for them. And then, look, Lanning's been consistent. Uh-huh. He's had some, you know, some duds, particularly in rematches. But I don't see many holes in this roster.
All right, quick hitters on the Big Ten. Team you like that is maybe under the radar and team you're maybe looking to fade a little bit?
Under the radar, you know, I don't love them, but I did bet over and be Maryland. A lot of returning production there. Yep. Schedule's not overly tough. I think they'll be favoring 5-6 games. Win total's only 4.5. That's an over bet that I made. Overvalued, there's quite a few. I like making a lot of under bets this time of year. Mm-hmm. Because usually bad things happen. not a lot of good when you're talking no portal. Let's go Michigan. I saw them in person. I didn't like what I saw from Underwood. Again, it's just one practice, but again, he just forcing stuff in the middle of the field, no business. I didn't like what I saw out of him. And when you add in a schedule that they got to play Indiana, got to play Oregon, got to play Ohio State, that's three losses. And on top of that, they got to play Penn State, Oklahoma, Iowa, Minnesota. Those are all teams that aren't slam dunk wins. So 8-4 for Michigan at best under there. Another team, I forgot. I even like these better than Maryland because I'm, you know, Loxley's on the hot seat. Minnesota, I watched their spring game. I think Minnesota's undervalued. I like over 5.5. That's a bet that I made just 2 days ago.
Oh, I like it. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about a team that you are being called a hater by the fan base and a homer by other people. So we'll get into that. I think you guys can guess who I'm talking about. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, continuing with Brad Powers. You can follow him on Twitter at BradPowers7Covers.com. Make sure you check out all of his work. He's always great at tweeting out where he'll be. So, and he puts out great info on Twitter right there, including his takeaways from spring games. You were at the Notre Dame spring game. All right, before we get into the game itself, 45,000 in attendance there in South Bend. It does feel like because of the way that last year ended, the momentum of this program, and it was a beautiful day. I will say that. What was the vibe like in South Bend as you head out there last weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I've been going to spring games at Notre Dame since 1989, and I've been to a majority of them since then. Probably the best atmosphere. Weather had a lot to do with it, but just overall vibes are great. In fact, after the game was over, a lot of people didn't go home. They just went back on campus. Beautiful campus. I mean, they haven't won a title in 40 years, but that campus wins a national championship every year because it's beautiful. Got a lot of walking by the lakes, the grotto, the basilica, the dome. Beautiful. You know how it is there. It's like my second home. So vibes were good, to say the least. As good as they've been in three decades.
Well, if you wanted to see a national championship level team just down the road from that stadium, the lacrosse team was taking care of business as they are number one in the country. But this is a college football pod, so we get back on track here. I mentioned it going to break that the fan base is calling you a hater, but everyone else is calling you a homer based off of your evaluations of the game. And you know, I read through them, and you and I have had plenty of conversations. I thought it was more than fair. So let's start with the quarterback and what we saw from him, what you saw from him in the spring game, CJ Carr. And then how much does your opinion change of what you saw personally and what was reported the week prior in a scrimmage that was seen by the media?
Nothing changed really for me. He was off 4 or 5 passes. I want to see consistency. And, you know, I go back to last fall camp. I mean, he wasn't obviously showing consistency to be neck and neck with Kenny Minchie. So you like him to be a little bit better. I will say after watching the game tape, I mean, he had 8 incompletions. I would say 4 were bad passes. The other 4 were just great plays by, you know, arguably the best secondary in college football. So you're going to have some incompletions there. I'm not going to overreact to that, especially when a lot of people have been covering the team for 2 decades plus said, and it was unanimous, maybe the best practice they've ever seen from a Notre Dame quarterback in a closed jersey scrimmage the week before. So I'm not going to overreact to that, but I'm not going to, you know, also overreact to somewhat bad performance in the blue gold game.
So what are the weaknesses for Notre Dame? What are the strengths for Notre Dame? And I know you pointed out, look, their schedule is not Texas Tech soft, but it is very manageable. At BYU, home to Miami, no doubt the most challenging games on the schedule. What are your expectations for this Irish team?
Well, let's start with quarterback CJ Carr. Yeah. Can get injured. So, I mean, the reason I kind of lean more towards Oregon, I mean, they got a 2-year starting quarterback as a backup in Riola. Notre Dame doesn't have that, even though I think Groves is going to be better than his recruiting ranking. Hebert played well. And I think the guy with the most upside hasn't even gotten to campus yet in Teddy Girard. But CJ Carr's got to stay healthy, period, or the season's over with. You know, I'm going to be nitpicky. You know, I don't know if they got the, you know, obviously lost a lot of upside and home run ability at running back, losing Price and Love. I still think they'll be productive there. But again, you got to downgrade the running back position. They're going to be better at wide receiver, although I want to see that number, you know, that number one alpha dog really emerge. Is it Faison in the slot, or is like a Quincy Porter or somebody that I would prefer at the X really come on strong? They need that if they want to win the title, because, I mean, it's national championship or bust this year as far as I'm concerned. They got to stay healthy on the offensive line, which hasn't been the case the last couple of years. Provided they're healthy there, they'll be improved. Defensive front was probably my biggest takeaway. This is the best, you know, the biggest, the most talented, and best they've been in the defensive line, I mean, in my adult lifetime, in 30 years. I mean, just showing, you know, Keon Keeley's a five-star. He's not going to start. And I don't even know if he's going to be their third best guy. He might be their fourth best guy behind the five-star true freshman. Linebackers will be fine, provided KVA stays healthy and the secondary's, you know, great. And the schedule's very, you know, it's a lot more manageable than last year. Starting off with A&M and Miami last year wasn't ideal. And they lost both games basically by a coin flip. So this is title or bust. I'm not going to predict it because, I mean, nothing good ever happens to this team since I've been starting to root for them. So that's kind of where I'm at.
waiting for a game-winning field goal like we did in 1993, Boston College. It would have been nice if they had missed that one. All right, let's swerve back to the SEC or swerve into the SEC. You mentioned something earlier in the podcast I want to bring back here, which is you think Texas is a bit overrated. So you look at the betting odds, you know, throw them in a bag, but it feels like Ohio State, Notre Dame, Indiana, Texas, Oregon, kind of your five unanimous favorites to win the title. Not too far behind is Georgia. So what about Texas do you think is a bit overrated?
Well, it kind of stinks. It was like one of the top five, six teams I didn't watch a spring game. You know, maybe I should take that in consideration. I've upgraded them from last year. I mean, how can you not like their portal class, especially the skill position, Hollywood Smothers and Brown at running back, Cam Coleman at wide receiver. I just, you know, this is a team. I just change one play or two plays from a season and what's the vibes? This is a team that should have lost to Kentucky, should have lost to Mississippi State. I mean, those are fortunate wins in overtime on the road last year. Lose one of them, 8-4. What's the vibes? If you'd have lost both of them, they'd have want Sark fired. And they said Arch Manning's the biggest bust in the history of college football. So I think there's a little bit of overreaction. Certainly Arch finished the season strong, his three best games of the season. You know, ran for 155 yards against Michigan. Although I'll say A&M was flawed. Michigan, you know, with an interim coach and everything that's going on in that program, flawed. I just think there's a little bit of overreaction. If you change the last name of one player on the team from Manning to, you know, Smith, what are the expectations? I mean, to me, that screams that they're being a little overvalued. I still think they're a title contender. I still think that they'll be in the mix. But to me, the team that's being disrespect, I mean, they're the favorite in the SEC, not the team that's the two-time defending champ that's kicked their ass the last three times they played, or at least two of the three times, Georgia. That just screams that Manning's getting too much love again.
So let's get to Georgia. You did watch their spring game. You have your evaluation thoughts up on Twitter. And if you're just wondering, Georgia and Texas, both around 3-ish to 1 to win the SEC. So let's go to the Bulldogs, another team that returns their quarterback. You know, I did a podcast earlier this offseason, Brad. I called it the year of the quarterback. I mean, you look up and down, man. The quarterback play should be spectacular across college football. So what do you expect from Gunnar Stockton? I know he wasn't a full go in the spring game, but are you buying this Georgia team a little bit?
Well, first, let me talk about quarterbacks. I'll make a bold prediction. I think the record for the NFL draft in the first three rounds is 8 taken in the first three rounds. We're going to break that next year. That's how good the quarterback play is going to be this upcoming season. I think 5 will go in the first round. And then there's 4 or 5 more guys that are capable of going in the second round. Forget the third round. Stockton, you know, he's not going to be a first rounder, but I could take a flyer on him in the second or third round, provided he keeps progressing. And he's got to progress. A little disappointing their performance against Ole Miss in the playoffs last year. I bet him in that game as one of my bigger bets. And obviously that went to the shit in the second half. This year's team, though, I think can be better than the last 2 years, kind of down years as far as Kirby Smart's concerned. And they still were able to win the SEC back-to-back years. I like what they got at running back, to say the least. Tight end position stocked, even though they lost, you know, Oscar Delp. They got to find a go-to guy, in my opinion, at wide receiver. That might be their weakness on that offense. I mean, they're not as talented and as deep up front as what they did when they were winning back-to-back national championships on defense, but still got a lot of talent there. The schedule, in my opinion, is a little easier than what it's been the last couple of years. I got them favored in every game. I mean, you talk about, you know, getting hammered on Twitter by Notre Dame fans. I was hammered by Georgia fans for calling 10-2. They thought I was being negative. I'm like, gee, guys, the win total's 9.5. I bet over 9.5. It's one of my favorite bets of the offseason. I bet them to win the SEC, and you're saying I'm being pessimistic. So I sell the house, the wife, the cars, the kids, you name it, Georgia over 9.5.
Gotta love college fan bases, Brad. You know it. And I know you revel in it too. Man, they are. There's something else, certainly, when you think about fan bases in college football, especially in the SEC. We know it just means more. So sticking around in the SEC, just bouncing around a little bit. Let's go to Bama. I think you were on earlier this offseason talking about Bama. Many of us were surprised to see Kalen DeBoer get an extension this offseason. So, man, the heat is on. I think Alabama fans have completely checked out on Kalen DeBoer already. So what are you expecting from Kalen DeBoer this season?
Well, I think there's, Ty Simpson just went, 13, surprisingly. But I think there's, the possibility of having more upside at quarterback, especially if they're healthy. Keelan Russell impressed in the spring game. I like what they have at wide receiver. So I'm expecting a pretty good passing attack. I mean, but Alabama's going to go as far as up front on the offensive line in their running game because it was non-existent at the end of last year when they're getting drilled by Georgia in the SEC championship game and dominated by Indiana in the Rose Bowl. It's got to be better. It can only be better at how pathetic it was. But man, watching the spring game, I didn't come away. Oh yeah, it's definitely going to be better this year. So that concerns me. I think they'll be a little bit better on defense. They were actually fine on defense last year. Schedule isn't bad. I mean, honestly, it would be a disappointment if they weren't 5-0 playing Georgia there on October the 10th. They're going to be favored in those first five games. If the new quarterback plays clean and stays healthy, I could see over 8.5. But I will say this, I don't think they're a title contending. I mean, watching all those, premier programs, top five or six that I did, Alabama's not one of those top five or six teams. So I think they're a playoff type team. They're just not a national title contending team. And that's not enough in Tuscaloosa.
You know, you talk about the year of the quarterback and how great this quarterback class is in college football. But there are, teams with some uncertainty. Alabama's one of them. And how about Tennessee? This is a team that, it's kind of been over the years. They feel like it's a plug-and-play type of system. You've got Faison Brandon, the highly touted freshman coming in. George McIntyre, the redshirt freshman. What are you expecting from old Rocky Top? Win total 7.5 for Josh Heupel.
Yeah, I watched their spring game, but it was stud. So, I mean,
yeah.
Not a great look there. They bring over the Penn State defensive coordinator, Jim Knowles, who might be a little long in the tooth at this point, although they get a lot of transfers from Penn State. I like what they did in the portal. And there's, some talent surrounding whoever's going to be the quarterback. They return the running back, a couple of good wide receivers. There was an early 6.5 out there I bet over. But I'm up, now that it's to 7.5, I think that's the appropriate number. In fact, if it got to be August and I was really itching to have more action, I'd probably lean under. And I'll get that way when we talk in August. I wish I'd have got a better look. They got an interesting game early against Georgia Tech that will get a good feel for both of those teams. I'm not a big hypo guy as it is. And as it's progressing, there's a little bit less ROI on Heupel, which is what happened also in his, brief period at UCF.
Elsewhere around the I guess it was a slip there because I was going to go to LSU. You've got Lane Kiffin coming in. There's a lot of other hires that we could talk about. Trinidad Chambliss, I believe the last time we talked, I don't know if he was expected to be back. So kind of like what we did in the Big Ten, Brad, some quick hitters, thoughts overarching from the SEC.
Well, I mean, my biggest takeaway would be, I think Georgia was being a little bit disrespected, but I mean, among other teams, my my attitude usually doesn't change on teams too much. Usually I trust my gut at this point. I've been following it enough, but I bet Florida under 7.5 right away because I was just like, man, this is a below 500 program the last 5-6 years. How the hell are they going to win 8 games? Even though I like John Sumrall quite a bit. But man, watching their spring, they got a little bit more dudes than I thought. And everyone's going to gravitate towards the quarterback battle. I gravitate always to the line of scrimmage. And they got more dudes up front on the defensive line than I expect. And they got a couple of good wide receivers in the portal. And they're pushing the ball down the field, which they haven't the last couple of years. So they're probably going to be a little bit better than I originally anticipated there at Florida. That's just a team that's out there. I told you I bet Tennessee over 6.5. Ole Miss, I bet over 7.5. Just because, I mean, how can you go 7-5 with Chambliss and Lacey on your roster? Yeah. I'm not a fan of the Beat Colding hire. But they did get a lot of guys in the portal. A really sneaky game week one is that Sunday game against Louisville. We'll get a good idea right away on Ole Miss.
Yeah, let's get to the ACC to wrap things up with you, Brad, and appreciate how much time you've hung out with us. You know, you and I could do this forever, but unfortunately, you got to pay your bills, so you got other things to do. Miami win total 10.5. I think it's plus money to the over. You can always tend to anticipate a loss, an unexpected loss coming from the U. Have they rectified that? Is there going to be any hangover? When you look at their schedule this year, they have the game at Notre Dame. They'll be an underdog at that game. What other landmines do you see out there for this Miami team?
Not many. Although, you know, I didn't have them losing to SMU or Louisville last year. Especially after they had already lost
one game. They had just won one of those games, Brad.
Yeah.
Just sorry. Just
so many things had to happen for these guys to not get in the playoff. But got to get Tulane and James Madison in there. And boy, got to get the Crimson Tide and their -3 rushing yards. Got to have them because Saban's still magically on the sidelines, I guess. I don't know. What a joke. Man, I'll never get over that because they were legit. The Irish were a legit title contender. Oh, all right, you asked me about Miami. I'm going to that game. Speaking of that, that's going to be a great atmosphere.
Before we get into Miami, I love going down college football memory lane with you. You are a historian. Notre Dame hosting Miami. It's November 7th. I can bet you $1 million it'll be a night game. And I'm thinking about the biggest games that have happened in that stadium's history. Obviously, think back to Catholics Convicts 1988, Notre Dame Florida State 93, Notre Dame USC 2005. Where do you think November 7th, from an atmosphere standpoint? Hell, you can go back a couple of years. Notre Dame Ohio State, I was there. It was a really good atmosphere. What do you expect from an atmosphere on November 7th with Miami coming to town?
If they're both undefeated, all-time type atmosphere. You got to go back 93 Florida State, 88 Catholics versus Convicts, where they do a 30 for 30 on the type of game. That's the kind of atmosphere I'm expecting. Because I just told you that the vibes around that campus are unlike what they've been the last three, decades. And I'll go back to the Indiana game I was at.
Yeah.
What was very good vibes. That was one of the best atmospheres I've ever been to. That program is very hungry, Notre Dame, for a title. And there's a lot of animosity. Old animosity with Miami for the old heads like me and older, and new animosity for what happened, not only losing last year, Miami getting in and whatnot. So I'm hoping it's a matchup of unbeaten teams. Great atmosphere. Back to Miami. Yeah, they're going to be favored in every game but the Notre Dame game. I can't pinpoint an exact loss. I mean, Clemson's way down. I mean, Clemson, 7-6 with that roster? I mean Clemson, as far as the draft, had a top five NFL draft as far as players going in or getting chosen. I don't, even though it's on the road to Clemson, I don't see that. And maybe they're buttoned up a little bit more.
I mean, come on, Brad. You didn't see that fourth round talent from Cade Klubnik out there? I actually thought the Jets had a good draft, but God, did you not watch last year? What are we doing? All right. Elsewhere in the ACC, Florida State, You know, is this it? Is this the end of the line here for Mike Norvell? I know his contract, his buyout is outrageous. They have to, you know, play SMU in week one. Then you got a bye week. Then you go to Bryant Denny. So you're staring at potentially a 1-2 start, even though you get SMU at home. You get Louisville on the road. You get Miami on the road. The schedule for an ACC standpoint, you get Pitt on the road, Clemson at home. It's not that easy. From an ACC standpoint, Virginia could be better, even though that's a bit of a revenge game. So schedule-wise, it's challenging. What are we expecting from Florida State this year?
So they're a tough team because statistically last year, they should have been like a 7 or 8 win team statistically, and they only won 5. But you got a coach that probably would have been fired if they'd have had the budget for it. Obviously any coach that's on the hot seat, anything that could go wrong, is magnified. And a lot could go wrong early. You mentioned SMU. I mentioned the Louisville Ole Miss game on Sunday. Labor Day night might be the most important game of week one, because if Florida State loses, and I think a book has it up right now where they're like a 2.5-point underdog, so they're expected to lose at least a slight loser, it's over already, because they're not beating Alabama. And here we go, 1-2. I mean, I don't see him rebounding from that. Don't have a great quarterback. Daniels from Auburn is going to be the starter. He doesn't move the needle for me. I bet under 6.5. So I'm very comfortable with that bet.
Yeah, you mentioned SMU. DraftKings does have it up. I think it's the only one in market. We actually talked about it with Matt Grill from DK on Tuesday night, and they do have him as a 2.5-point favorite. So let's look at SMU. The Ponies, they do get Kevin Jennings back. It feels like he's been there for a decade. So he's back. SMU opens up the season, as we talked about, on the road. I mean, talk about a tricky start to the season, right? At Florida State, at Louisville, the first two out of the first three games there for SMU. They do avoid Miami. They have to go to South Bend. So they have three really tricky games on the road this year. Virginia at home could be an interesting one. JKS and Cal coming to Dallas. Where are you on SMU? Are they a top 25 team?
Yeah, I think they can be. Certainly, you know, Jennings is a proven commodity. You know, I think the head coach is underrated. Although I will say, you know, they did lose the OC in DC, and I like those guys a little bit. So we'll see how that impacts them, especially early with a tricky schedule. I think on paper, they're probably the second best team in the ACC. I don't think they have a great schedule, particularly they got to face Louisville, who's also in that mix. I think it's the win total is 8.5. It's fair, 8-4, 9-3 type of team, which is fine for SMU considering they jumped up recently. I know they hit the ground running and made the ACC championship game in year one, but I mean, I hope the fan base doesn't get disgruntled. 8-9 win seasons in that league.
You know what's funny is, everyone, and I'm guilty of it, I took my shots at James Franklin because he talked a big game at Penn State, you know, and just never could win the big game. You and I certainly remember his little brother pep talk to Marcus Freeman that maybe poked the bear a little bit prior to that Orange Bowl. But all that said, I'd love the hire by Virginia Tech to bring him in. If you could be back to 9-10 wins in Blacksburg with his ability to recruit the DMV, which he does very well with his time in Maryland and then at Penn State. So Virginia Tech, I don't know if they're too, it feels like they're kind of a chic, like, hey, watch out for Virginia Tech, right? So they do have to play Miami on the road, SMU on the road, Clemson on the road. So you get some challenging games in conference play. You get Pitt at home. Where are we on Virginia Tech in year one under James Franklin?
I was expecting to be a buyer because I do like to hire, and I think it'll work out long term. I love what he did in the portal. I love what he's doing on the recruiting trail, and he's motivated too. I like that guy with the chip on his shoulder, even at his stage in his career, to prove Penn State wrong. But 7.5 was an early opening win total line. I bet under. Mm-hmm. I thought 8-4 was asking a little bit too much for this roster in transition. But it's now 6.5 in most spots. I think it's the 7-6 and 6-7-5 team. So I think that's a fair number. As long as, you know, they make some improvements back in a bowl game, get the fan base a little bit more excited. I could see, I mean, there's plenty of room for growth in this conference, especially with the way I think he's going to recruit, where they can, you know, they're not going to, you know, challenge Miami at the top, but they can be that second best program, especially with the team like Florida State program down. So my expectation is Virginia Tech's going to be right there. Clemson, I forgot, is on the way down too, so they can take advantage of that.
All right, Brad, I'll let you run on this. Same question I've asked you about the other P4s. Buy high or sell low, or sell high, buy low. Easy for me to say. We've been talking for a while. On the ACC, team under the radar, team you might look to fade.
I'm going to buy. They're not super low, but I think there's some upside with Louisville. I like Lincoln Kienholz. I think people forget he was neck and neck with Julian Singh in August last year. I think he's going to be a hit at quarterback, and they might get better. I think they'll get better quarterback play than last year. I think they're live in that week one game against Ole Miss, so you know what I bet there. And I think you look at that schedule, getting that SMU game at home, they could be favored in 10 or 12 games. So Brohm's not always consistent. He's good for an upset win or two. Yep. He's also good for an upset loss or two. But I think this is at least an 8-4 team. So let's go over there, buy low. Sell high, we haven't talked about them. And it's not, the win total is not super high, but I worry about the losses, and that being Georgia Tech. Lose Haynes King at quarterback. More importantly, I love that coaching staff, and they lose both the OC, who went down, you know, with Summerall to Florida, and they lose the DC, went back to Texas. I think that's going to be some losses that they won't be able to overcome. So I think they're a 6-6 type of team. Let's go under 6.5 on the Yellow Jackets.
A man I know I can always get great insight from, and I'm sure I will. I always check my phone. I'm like, don't text Brad right now. Let's wait. Let's give him a couple more weeks before he comes back on the pod. At BradPower7, covers.com. Check out all his content over there. You know he'll be grinding all summer long, getting ready for college football. Brad, appreciate you as always, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
There he is, Brad Powers. We'll take a quick break, wrap up the podcast after this.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're wrapping things up here on the podcast, and just wanted a couple minutes to chat with all of you. We are 4 months away from the start of the college football season, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. Maybe you're listening to this late in the summer, just getting that crash course before the season starts, but 4 months from today, 122 days from week zero. We'll continue our countdown. And my vow to you guys is that we will have an episode each and every week moving forward. So the draft is done. Spring football is done. There's no portal. Now we could see some unique circumstances pop up like Texas Tech. But my goal right now, moving forward, we're in it, baby. We're counting down the days. I don't know about you. Maybe this is me just being a sicko, but I really could have gone for some kickoff times or some bowl announcements. Shout out to the Poinsettia Bowl coming back. The inaugural Puerto Rico Bowl will be in our life. So we know at least we have one more year of bowl games and hopefully many more to come. So, yeah, looking forward to that. Thanks to Brad. Always love talking to Brad. I always know he's prepared, ready to go with some betting insight. So we will certainly circle back with Brad at some point this offseason, but I will extend the invitation to you like I did last year, whether it be in our ratings, which please continue to give us those 5-star ratings. It helps us out as we continue to grow this podcast and make it the world's largest podcast. Hey, you always have to have goals, right? But cfbpod@vsin.com is our email. If you've got interesting thoughts, if you've got guest recommendations or requests, if you've got bets that you've made, hit us up. We'll talk about it. I want to be more interactive. You can always tweet me as well, @1TimMurray. So @1TimMurray, cfbpod@vsin.com. And of course, iTunes, 5-star review. Check it out. Put it in the comments there if you have some guest recommendations. We had some really good ones a year ago, and we were able to pay those out. So hopefully you guys have some names that I haven't heard of in the college football world, or maybe I'm overlooking. So would love to hear your suggestions. And certainly we vow to have as many quality guests coming on this podcast throughout the summer months. And I put my hands together because it's that time. It's starting to feel, after the draft wrapped up, it got the juices flowing for me. I got to see all of those highlights, right? And now I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get this college football season rolling here. 4 months from today, week zero, loaded week one. Hopefully a couple shows on the road. Last year, of course, we went out to Hawaii. Shout out to our guys, as always, Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of this podcast. So we went out to the island last year. I don't know if we'll have a trip to the island this year, but I've got a couple of ideas in the works that could get us out on the road with the VSIN College Football Tailgate Show back for another season as well. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. We will be back next week, and we will be back with you every week moving forward. So once again, check us out on YouTube. Continue to subscribe. The subscription numbers have been solid. Let's continue to make them better. If you run into a random stranger, we always appreciate you telling them about the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast, and continue to hit us up with those downloads and subscriptions on iTunes and Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We have two great producers for this show, Ryan Hunter and Wyatt Tomchek, doing an amazing job as always. We have a mediocre host. That would be me, Tim Murray. We will be back next week with another good guest for you. Thanks to Brad Powers. I'm Tim. We're back next week right here on the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.